from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Joe Kitchet has made a name for himself, winning jury verdicts in the millions, sometimes billions of dollars against Wall Street, big banks, and other corporations that have harmed the public. He took on PG&E after the deadly San Bruno explosion, Wells Fargo for its fake accounts, and Lincoln Savings and Loan for swindling investors. Kitchet joins us to talk about his career and his new book, The People vs. Greed. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning, and we welcome you to another hour of this morning's forum program. Attorney Joe Kitchet joins us in the studio for this forum hour. In a career spanning more than five decades, the Burlingame trial lawyer has made a reputation for taking on white-collar criminals and other powerful interests and winning big settlements. In one of his most famous cases, or victories, Kitchet won a $3.3 billion jury verdict for investors in a case against Charles Keating's Lincoln Savings and Loan. The amount was later reduced to $1.75 billion. He's represented everyone from the San Bruno pipeline explosion victims to defrauded Wells Fargo customers to outed CIA agent Valerie Plame, and he was recently reported to be on Governor Jerry Brown's shortlist to replace Kamala Harris as California Attorney General. In his latest book, The People vs. Greed, Stealing America, Main Street vs. Wall Street, Kitchet calls for a populist crusade against corporate greed and a return to ethics in business and politics, and we welcome him to the program. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much, Michael. It's an honor to be on your program. You have one of the best programs in the air.
Thank you for that. You got a Cal Poly shirt on, but you are a graduate of North Carolina and was an engineer. You were an engineering student.
I was an engineering graduate of Cal Poly. I went from North Carolina State playing basketball down to Cal Poly, got an engineering degree, then went to UC Law School, and was blessed with public education, Michael.
Let's talk. Well, we had a whole hour about public education.
That's where I raised that.
And we'll perhaps talk about it in the course of this hour. But I want to talk about your background somewhat because it's pretty fascinating to me. But first, I want to talk about just the fact that you've been certainly designated many times as one of the best trial lawyers in the land. And I alluded to that $3.3 billion reduced to $1.7 billion in the famous savings and loan Lincoln Bank and Charles Keating back in 1990. But you have won some major settlements. And yet, sort of reading up for our discussion this morning, the biggest thrill you had as a trial lawyer, the fact that you made the most impact from your perspective, was 1983 in the Viet Liuzu case, which you lost.
And I would try it 10 times over and lose it again 10 times because I thought that brought more goodness to the public or more public benefit to our country than any case I ever tried.
You should clarify for listeners a little bit what that is because of the memory here. It was an FBI informant who allegedly killed a civil rights worker, Violet Liozzo, and you essentially sued the government.
Huh? I sued the FBI for putting a violent criminal in as an informant.
Informant for the KKK.
For the KKK. Yeah. Pulled up next to her. She was a white woman from Detroit, went down to help in the march in Selma with Martin Luther King, John Lewis, and others. Car pulled up next to her, put a gun out the window, blew her brains out. He's a Ku Klux Klan member. To show how tough he was, he used to go down to Greyhound bus stations and break African-Americans' legs with baseball bats to prove that he was a real tough KKK guy. In the 80s, one of Kennedy's aides came to me and said, Joe, we think we know who pulled the trigger. Would you go after the FBI for it's a scandal if they put these informants in places where they can do that kind of harm? I did. I took that case on with a couple of great lawyers, Dean Robb out of Michigan. We tried the case back up in Michigan, although we spent a lot of time in Alabama. Being chased by both the Ku Klux Klan and the FBI. Two cars would follow us down the road as we were interviewing people. Bottom line is we tried the case. We lost it because we couldn't get a jury. The judge found that the FBI did not act to a level of wanton disregard of life, meaning, in other words, a higher level than negligent. The good news is within 6 months, the FBI changed the way they hired FBI informants. Now, look, I'm all for law enforcement. I'm a big law enforcement guy, but you can't put a killer in as an informant and get immunity calling yourself an informant.
Well, it changed the whole nature of informants. It changed, didn't it not? It changed the
whole
nature
of way
it,
yeah. Informants were hired. I tried that case 10 times over. That had more benefit to society than any case I've tried in my 50 years.
I also had to sort of spotlight the fact that just in terms of pedigree of somebody concerned about civil rights, and that case certainly highlights a great deal of concern about civil rights. You go back, we were talking about you in North Carolina, drinking from a segregated water fountain, starting the first fraternity, really, certainly in that state and maybe across the land that was integrated. I mean, you got a pedigree when it comes to civil rights.
I was a tough young kid off the streets of Brooklyn. I went down there to play basketball and take engineering. Of course, the two didn't work. You couldn't take engineering and play basketball at the same time. But my experience in downtown Raleigh in those days, this is 1955, Michael. I walked up to a quote. Excuse me, 1955, I walked up to two fountains. They had white and colored. And I had the audacity to show some ballplayers I was with, come on, let's drink out of the colored fountain. Boom. Sheriff, funny thing is, the magistrate said to me, or one of the police senior police officers said to me, where are you from? I said, New York. He said, what are you doing down here? I said, well, I'm down here to play basketball and take engineering. He said, how are we going to do against Duke Friday? And I said, I think we might do pretty well if I'm there. Of course, I was pulling his leg. He said, get your white ass out of here. I went out. We got on a bus. We're driving back to campus. I'm still arrogant. I go sit in the back of the bus where black people had to sit. I see the bus driver notices that. I see him. I'm watching like a hawk. I see a sheriff's car go by, and I see him wave and pull over. I was out the back door of that bus so fast, I had never run so fast in my life.
We're talking to Joe Cachette, who is obviously quite a raconteur, as well as a famous trial lawyer, and has written a book that is out about greed, and we'll talk about that as well. I want to – you're talking about your Brooklyn roots and, you know – brings up street smartness and, you know, toughness and all that sort of thing, which is sort of what you were marinated in your background. But it's often pointed out in the narrative that you tell about your life that your mother was pregnant with you and she was a Ziegfeld girl. She was on stage as a nun.
She was carrying a nun in Chicago and could carry me full term. And that's how I was born.
You were born for the stage. Actually, I was thinking about how much often trial lawyers are associated with performance and stage, right?
Well, you know, there's a lot of truth to that. If you're going to stand in front of a jury, you better be able to communicate. The word is communicate with those people in that jury box. All too often, I've stood in trial and I've watched people that should have gone to dental school and not law school.
You've also been a major donor for the Democratic Party and a strong supporter, was a strong supporter certainly of Hillary Clinton's. And I'm wondering, when you're talking about Wall Street, as you are, and you're talking about greed not only in Wall Street, but greed in the healthcare world and greed in so many institutions in the United States, Big Pharma and so forth, the Democratic Party has, in many people's minds, also succumb to a kind of greed, you know. And one of the things that probably hurt Hillary Clinton in her campaign was this association with Wall Street, giving speeches and so forth. Well, specifically Goldman Sachs.
$800,000 reportedly.
Just for speeches, right?
That she never would make public.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the problem is deep. And the problem is sort of what you seem to be getting at in your book, which is money is the root of so much evil.
You bet. That's where it all is. In 2007, I was a big Hillary supporter. I switched to Obama on the word hope. I thought, here's a guy who may just understand as a community organizer that there's more to life than just that dollar bill. I switched over to him. I was so disappointed in the first 4 years and then in the last 4 years. He appointed an attorney general who never put a single, don't get me started on this one, Michael, never put a
single
executive from Wall Street in jail.
Let me ask you about that, because you point that out, and certainly it's come up many times in discussions, especially after the Wall Street meltdown on this program. Couldn't Eric Holder or whomever go after some of those Wall Street crooks, not only individually, but on charges of racketeering?
Not even a question. But they chose not to. They chose not to go after Wall Street because they felt that if they did that, they would bring down the economy. Remember, the economy hit all-time lows in 2008. There is no question that Obama came into a very tough problem. What he did, unfortunately, was surround himself with Wall Street people as to how to get out of that problem. Now, he did get out of the problem, but let me ask you this. Does anyone realize that when we bailed out the Wall Street banks that December, they gave $30 million one operation in bonuses to their executives. You know whose money that was? That was your
money. Taxpayer money, yeah.
That was all taxpayer money.
Is it easy, though, to be critical for you? I mean, you've won huge settlements. You're a rich guy. I mean, you can be critical of people.
Well, and I give a lot of it away.
I know, and you've done a lot of pro bono funding, certainly, and as I said, a lot to the Democratic Party and so forth. But this kind of idea that money is too tied to politics, have you not benefited from it?
Oh, wait a minute. Let me put it this way. I am a dyed-in-the-wool capitalist. Are you kidding me? Having grown up on the streets of Brooklyn, I know I believe in capitalism. I believe in working. I believe in earning money. I am a tough guy when it comes to that. But I want to see our society operate in a fair way that everybody has a shot at it. And that's what I fear coming next Monday.
And greed is at the core. Avarice.
Not even a question. On both sides, Democrat, Republican, I don't care who you are. The one sane voice I heard in the last several months was a guy by the name of Bernie Sanders, because he talked about education being free for everybody. And you know, and I know, that you could take my book, you could take all the books written about greed, and you could tear them up and throw them away if the public was educated. Let me tell you about one example that's going to happen Monday. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. That was put into operation in 2011 by our Congress when the Democrats controlled Congress. And by the way, a lot of Democrats fought it. That will be gone, Michael, in 60 days. They will withdraw all the funding. Why? Because they go after the banks that are cheating little people. There's a bank right over here, a headquarters called Wells Fargo, who just stole from over 2 million people. They did identity theft by opening identity theft. By the way, you go out and steal someone's identity, the young man in the next room over there, you'll do 60 days, you'll do 90 days, you might do a year in jail. I will tell you, there will not be a single Wells Fargo executive that will go to jail under this administration. And they just stole the identity of over 2 million people. That's the problem we're faced with.
Well, is it going to be worse in your judgment as a Democrat and as someone who was disillusioned by Obama and Eric Holder's inefficacy and so forth under Trump? It's got to be worse?
Oh, it's going to be a lot worse. Are you kidding? How about the word inversion? Apple has $150 billion offshore that they were allowed to get away with over the last 8 to 10 years. You don't really think the Donald, our president-elect, is going to go after them in a harsh, mean way to get that money back, although he talks as if he is. I hope he goes after the Fords, the General Motors, everybody who's going offshore to build. That's called inversion. How about Big Pharma now moving all their headquarters to the Netherlands? The hottest new place, by the way, you want to go is Malta.
You've Every also other... criticized them for the generics that they put out.
Oh, please. It's a disgrace.
I mean, they get somebody off the market, essentially,
through
a lawsuit.
They buy up a little genetic company. First, they sue them for stealing their patent, and then they settle the case. It's a game. You know who the game is created by? Lawyers. We don't have an hour to spend, trust me.
But some call it capitalism.
Capitalism, my ass.
There's also, I interviewed a number of years ago when he had fallen to some extent into disgrace, Elliot Spitzer, and I thought he was the one guy who really may have been able to clean up.
He did.
Because he was tough and he was relentless and all that.
He did.
And he was after them. We haven't seen anybody come along like that, though, unfortunately.
Well, because they get crushed down.
No, it was his own fault, I mean, in terms of the crushing.
Oh, of course. Poor Elliot, he had a sickness. But put that aside just for a moment. Here's what happens. Unfortunately, you get a terrific person, man, woman, whoever it may be. There are a lot out there. Let me tell you, this Elizabeth Warren, watch that person. You talk about integrity. You talk about a backbone. You talk about somebody who's out there. The Bernie Sanders of the world, even though he's in his, what, his 80s?
No, not yet.
You got some close. Great young people coming along, millennials. You got some great principled young people. And if they know how to work the system, and that's what they have to learn. They didn't work the system this time. They didn't get out and vote. They didn't get out and really help the Democratic Party. And I know why. They were disillusioned.
Well, they tried to certainly instill Bernie Sanders in as a nominee, but failed.
Because they didn't know how to work the system.
How would they have worked the system differently?
Oh, let me tell you, that it's a tragedy. But we know what went on for Hillary. And I was a Hillary supporter. I got to just emphasize that. But she was slated to have that nomination, wasn't she?
And all the polls said so, yeah.
And we didn't have the give and take back and forth that we should have had driving her to a progressive stance. Why didn't she ever give up her speeches that she gave to Goldman Sachs? I mean, why is
well,
it
Trump
she didn't
give
go
up
to
his
Wisconsin?
Tax,
why didn't she go to Wisconsin?
Well, because she took it for granted. I think that's what you're implying, and I think you're right. In the Rustic Belt, they thought they had it locked. But there was also the sense that she wouldn't release her speeches. Trump wouldn't release his tax returns. I mean, you know, Sanders was a breath of fresh air for many people because he was above board and he was out there.
Absolutely.
Know, and there was a desire for that kind of integrity.
Right.
It comes across in your book, the need for – I mean, you're clearly a crusader for education. You want education to emphasize ethics to a greater degree and so forth. But
right.
There's been a falling away that has been dramatic in many respects. And the falling away includes, unfortunately, many of the young. They're out there in Silicon Valley trying to make a quick fortune.
Well, they are. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of good young people out there. Yes, they are trying to make their quick fortune. That's a handful of them. But there are a lot of terrific young people out there that I see and I talk to every day. They just have to learn now how to work the system.
Okay.
And we, as
a professor, I, of course, have to agree with you. I meet many young people who are imbued with a sense of wanting to do something, wanting to make a change, wanting to make impact. It's inspiring. But when you say change the system, play the game differently, how?
How? Really very simple. It's called getting involved. You have to get involved. Too many people turned off. For example, the state of Michigan. Trump won the state of Michigan by roughly 11,000 votes. This may come as a shock to all our listeners. 87,000 people in Michigan voted but didn't check the box for president. What does that tell you? By the way, most of those votes that didn't check the box for president came out of Detroit and the Detroit suburbs. That's a shocker. That's what I'm talking about getting involved. I mean, you got to get out into the system. Lawyers have to do pro bono work. Doctors have to stand up to Big Pharma when they come to them, knock on the door and say, doctor, use my medicine. We'll give you $100 back a month to take your wife to Hawaii to one of our conventions.
You're talking about commitment and citizenship, really.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Michael, let me just interrupt 1 second and tell you, do you know that in grades 1 to 6 today, they don't have courses on civic education anymore?
Something I've despaired about on the air.
It's shocking to me.
We're talking, by the way, with Joe Kitchet, and he is the author of The People versus Greed, Stealing America, Main Street versus Wall Street. He's also a Burlingame-based attorney and certainly recognized as one of the major and leading trial attorneys in the nation. You interviewed Bernie Madoff, one of the
few
lawyers who actually sat down and had a conversation with Madoff. That was back in 2009, but what did you learn about greed from him?
It was interesting. One of my partners and I, Nancy Feinman, went back. We cut a deal with Bernie's lawyers. We were the only lawyers in America to interview Bernie Madoff. How did we do that? We sued his family. And the deal I cut with his lawyers was, I'll let your wife and family out, but I want 6 hours with you. We cut a deal for 4 hours. I went and sat with him. Nancy,
you said
and
he cared mainly about his wife but not his sons, though, didn't you?
That's absolutely correct. Yeah. He really was. It was all. He didn't care about his sons. It was all about his
wife. Well, he lost
wife.
One to suicide.
That's right. But here, to answer your question,
yeah.
What's shocking to me is why was I able to do that? Why was I able to cut a deal to go back, spend 4 hours on them? By the way, for the first 3 hours, I can't use on the air what he – I can't say on the air what he gave me. It would be a word that you wouldn't accept. I looked at him after 3 hours and I said, Bernie, this deal is off. His lawyer started to say something. I said, no, you don't say a word because the deal we had was you don't interrupt me. For the last hour, I finally found out from Bernie Madoff, he had never told the SEC, he never told the Department of Justice, he never told anybody how we rolled the money through British banks. I was over in England 2 weeks later, Nancy and I. The bottom line is this. You have to go aggressively after people. And I think it's the aggressive language that Trump used. Jobs, jobs, jobs. I'm going to bring this son of a bitch back. You heard his language at these. And people bought into that because 50% of America, Michael, lives paycheck to paycheck.
They also wanted a tough guy. They wanted a guy who could not be politically correct, who could, you know, talk from the gut.
Exactly. But what's wrong with that? You know, I loved Obama. He's going to go back, I guarantee you, and become a college professor. He's a professor. He couldn't stand up there and say, let me tell you what I'm going to do. He's a great guy. I love the man. One of our great presidents. But he couldn't stand up and tell Apple to get your money back here or you have big trouble. He couldn't go to Big Pharma and say, you're not moving your headquarters to the Netherlands. You're not moving your headquarters to Ireland and pay less taxes. He didn't do that. You know why? He surrounded himself with the elite group. And I hate to say this because I love them, the Harvard, Yale, Princeton crowd, which I have such fun time with, and their big policy issues. Don't give me policy issues. When I was playing ball on the streets of Brooklyn, don't give me policy. I had to get that ball in the basket or I didn't score a point.
Again, our guest is Joe Kitchett, and we're going to invite you to join us in this program. I wanted to ask you, though, about a big case locally that's gotten a lot of attention, and that's the Headley family and Lefty O'Douls. And there's been a lot of – well, we got 90 seconds here, so we really can't get into it. But perhaps when we return, there's been a lot of skullduggery, though. I'd like to just get a quick comment from you.
Sure.
I mean, Sam Singer bringing up your divorce case and sealed records forth. Do you want to comment on that publicly?
No. Sam Singer is out of another world. I mean, can you imagine commenting on my divorce case in regard to what – handler is trying to do. There's this poor little family that owns Lefty O'Douls. Come on now.
It's become a big case. I mean, not your divorce case. the Lefty O'Doul case. I want to get your take on that, but we are going to a break, and I want to invite listeners to join us. We're talking to Joe Kitchett, and he has a book out called The People Versus Greed, Stealing America, Main Street Versus Wall Street. Your questions and comments are welcome, and join the conversation. Our toll-free number is available right now to you. It's 866-733-6786. Again, join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We do welcome your involvement, your questions or comments, and we will go to you forthwith. So feel free, again, to join the program. You're listening to the Forum program on KQED Public Radio. I'm your host, Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Joe Kitchett has made a name for himself winning jury verdicts in the millions, sometimes billions of dollars against Wall Street, big banks, and other corporations that have harmed the public. He took on PG&E after the deadly San Bruno explosion and Wells Fargo for its fake accounts and Lincoln Savings and Loan for swindling investors. And he was reported to be on Governor Jerry Brown's short list to replace Kamala Harris as California Attorney General. That will have to wait maybe until he's in his 80s. But the Burlingame attorney is here with us. Star power brings Nancy Pelosi and Willie Brown to his birthday parties, and he's joining us to talk about his career and his new book, The People Versus Greed, Stealing America, Main Street Versus Wall Street. And we're going to go to your calls and emails forthwith here. Let me go first to hear you, Joe, talk about the Lefty O'Doul case. I mean, describe what it was and why it was in the public interest.
Well, it's really very basic, and it's before the courts right now, so I won't really say a lot. The bottom line is it's one more example of People Versus Greed. Somebody thinks they own the name Lefty O'Douls, even though it was trademarked, and it's really not a complex case.
Lefty O'Doul, famous ball player, we should mention,
yeah,
for some of our younger listeners.
It's, it, It's a restaurant down in Union Square, and I don't know what all the hubbub is about, but somebody wants it and says it's theirs, and the owner says, look, I have a trademark on the name. And you live by the law. If you have a trademark on the name, that's the name.
Taking property. It's really what you describe it as being.
Absolutely. Kind of,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was also going to ask you about the Big Shoreline case that you're involved in, which
Martin's
many of
Beach.
Our listeners know about. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a very interesting situation because, interestingly enough, the owner of Martin's Beach is a big, big contributor to Democrats. So nobody would take him on. And he bought Martin's Beach down there and immediately, or within a short period of time, closed it off to the public, arguing that the California Coastal Commission has no jurisdiction over him, et cetera, et cetera. That's probably one of the most important cases I will ever handle. By the way, you know how I got into it? The Democratic Attorney General wouldn't get involved. The governor wouldn't get involved. My good friend would not get involved. People would not get involved because he was a big contributor. So who came to me? Some surfers. And they said to me, look, Mr. Carchet, we're coming to you as a last resort. Martin's Beach is being shut, and we'd like to go surfing there, blah, blah, blah. I took the case on. We won the case. But here's the issue, Michael. The issue is this man is going to take this all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. But here's what his lawyers say. His lawyers say you can't take private property without paying for it. Well, I'll agree to that. But we're not taking private property. The public has been using that beach for almost 90 years. So he went up to Sacramento recently, and to pull their little tail, he wants for a walkway down to the water $35 million. Michael, that's more money than you make in a year. And that's where he's going. He's going to take this all the way to the Supreme Court with a new 5-4 ruling. He may get a ruling that you can't take private property for public usage without full compensation, without this, without that. But it's even worse than that, because one of the most important appointments that Trump is going to make is head of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Act, because I'll be very brief on this. Here's where this is going. You like going to Yosemite? You like going to federal parks? Watch what's coming. The Endangered Species Act was passed back in 1973. In 1994, Newt Gingrich tried to kill it. He wanted to kill it because he wanted big oil companies, petroleum companies, to go on to U.S. state parkland and drill. Do you know in Cleveland last summer when the Republicans all met in Cleveland? A little note in the New York Times, they passed the resolution that they're going to do away with the Endangered Species Act. Because if they can do away with that, they can start selling, watch my word, I'm going to say it again, selling national parks.
Privatize and drill, baby, drill. Yeah,
you got it.
Yeah. All right, we're going to drill into some phone calls here.
Yeah.
But I need to mention the fact that the case, the Lefty O'Dua case, is still active, and we're hearing your side, Joe.
Yeah, I agree.
You know.
Yeah.
But let's hear from our listeners, and let me begin with George. You're on. Good morning.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. Thank you for hosting a wonderful program, you and your substitutes. I have two questions. One, 25 years ago, I had the privilege of reading a memo that was in the possession of a bank regulator regarding Charles Keating, about how, and this letter was from Charles Keating's attorneys, stating how they were going to manipulate the media in favor of Charles Keating by accusing the bank regulators, the lead regulator, of being gay and putting in the paper, of trying to put him in the Wall Street Journal, having him appear before the Senate Banking Committee in good light. How pervasive is this form of manipulative behavior? That's my first question. My second question is, compare and contrast the U.S. bank bailout versus the Japanese bank bailout, where the Japanese government shut down some banks or injected convertible preferred shares so that the public actually got something, whereas in the U.S. it seems like we just gave the banks trillions of dollars of free funding or near free funding, either directly or by way of creating the Fed program to purchase assets. I would much appreciate your commenting on both of these points.
All right, George, two good questions. Thank you for those. We'll go to Joe.
Yeah, I'm very simple. You are absolutely right. Every word that came out of your mouth. I was the lawyer that went after Charles Keating. I know he got the press to go after me. I know exactly what you're saying. One of the regulators he billed as being gay, And this is, what, 25, 30 years ago, when it was a tough situation. He went after viciously this individual. I wish I could remember his name. He was a hero in my book. He stood up, and all Keating kept throwing at him was that he was a gay pervert, this, that, everything. And that isn't changing. That is going to continue on, maybe not using the gay issue the way it was used then, but using all kinds of different issues now with your blogs, with your new internet. It's a whole new world of social media. Next, on the bank bailout, that's what I talked about before, the Japanese knew how to do it. But we had our elites that said, no, no, you can't bail out these banks without honoring, listen to this word, honoring their contracts. And the contracts had all these bonus provisions. And one bank gave $30 million in bonuses at Christmas time, at the end of the year. It was shocking to me that the DOJ went along with that and didn't say that contract is illegal.
Let me thank the caller. We're going to go right to another caller. And let me go next to a caller here in San Francisco. Neil, you're on.
A couple of questions. First, who should Obama have appointed as Attorney General? And the second, not to be too flattering, but have you ever considered running for public office yourself, and why not?
Thank you very much. No, you know what? I think that Eric Holder was a terrific guy. He came in on the scene. He just didn't get the support, and he didn't have, I'm going to just lay it out to you, he didn't have the guts to go after a lot of people he worked with. Remember, he came out of the law firm Covington and Burling, an excellent law firm, but you have to look at who they represent. They represent big oil, big pharma, and Wall Street. So where was his mind? I mean, they put him in that position, Eric Holder. What did you think he was going to do? It was all nonsense. Have I ever considered running for public office? Yes, I have, and every time I get around to it, I think, wait a minute, this is crazy. I can do more. I can do more. And not be beholden to anyone by using our system of justice, which is under attack right now.
So who should Obama have appointed?
Yeah.
Well, there are 100 people. I can go into 10 different names, 20 different names.
Who rises to the top? Who should have been maybe there rather than Holder for you?
Oh, I think a lot of people I think that Teddy Kennedy would have been a fabulous attorney general, just as his brother Bobby Kennedy was, who had guts, by the way. I'm a big union guy, but remember Bobby Kennedy? What was the first thing he did when he got appointed? He went after the unions and the corruptness.
He went after Jimmy Hoffa specifically.
He went after Jimmy Hoffa. So, look, there are a lot of people. I could give you different names, but there were people.
Okay, Neil, thank you. Neil was looking for a name, I think.
Yeah.
We'll take another name caller. Jerry, you're on. Morning.
Yes, good morning. Frank Thomas wrote, Thomas Frank wrote a book called Listen Liberal or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People. And Jesse Eisinger wrote an article in the New York Times, Why Only One Banker Went to Jail for the Financial Crisis. My question is, why aren't law schools teaching students to be prosecutors? They're teaching them to be defendants of everything, but not teaching them the ins and outs of prosecution.
No, I agree with you. I am a very big supporter of education. I am a very big supporter of all your professional educations. We've got to totally revamp how we're teaching young people to go into the professional law. Prosecutors are absolutely a needed element of our judicial system. A good prosecutor can make the world a difference. All you have to do is go across the bay and look at someone like Nancy O'Malley. So many people that I can think of, our own DA in San Mateo County, the guy Jeff Klein down in San Jose, L.A., you've got some fabulous prosecutors who are going to make a difference.
Let me thank the caller. You know, he mentioned Thomas Frank. He's written about the fact that voters have gone against their own interests, you know, by voting for Trump and so
sure.
forth. But the counter-argument to that is that those voters were being misread. They were unhappy. You kind of alluded to this before. And the Democratic Party just didn't get it. And
didn't get it at all.
And where is the leadership now in the Democratic Party? I mean, you know, Bernie Sanders probably is going to be too old to come back in a national spotlight. There are certainly, young people, and some of them here in California or youngish, who are looking toward the national stage. But who do you see as being a leader?
So one thing I want to emphasize, though, not because I'm the age I am, age has nothing to do with it. You know who showed that? Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, what is he now, Michael? How old is Bernie?
I thought he's about 74, 75, 74, something 75. Like that. But it's only a difficulty in terms of the votes you can garner and people
and I agree.
It's time to put you out to pasture or whatever.
No. I agree totally. And we have to bring along young leadership. There's a lot. I could go down the line. This mayor of San Jose, Liccardo, Sam Liccardo, the mayor Garcetti of Los Angeles, I've heard both of these chaps speak. They're absolutely fabulous. They are leaders of tomorrow. The problem is, and I love Nancy Pelosi, she's one of my dearest friends, but there are times when you have to move over. In my law firm, I'm going to tell you, there are a lot better trial lawyers than I am, who I've had the fortune of bringing along. You take a Frank Petrie, a Neil McCarthy. These are real trial lawyers, and I just have to move out of the way. It can be done, but the Democratic Party has to get out of the way of young leadership and let them move. That's why millennials were turned off. They didn't get any voice in there.
What about your former business partner, the lieutenant governor, Gavin Newsom?
Gavin Newsom, I think, is an unbelievable comer in this state. I think he's got guts. He's got integrity. I think he's a terrific guy. And we got, by the way, just so we're clear, you got a lot of Gavin Newsom coming along. But give him space. Let him run.
Here's some comments, and let me get some responses from you from a number of listener comments. Ron writes, much white-collar crime comes from greed and self-interest, dominating the interests of the shareholders. The Trump administration will arguably have more potential for conflicts of interest than previous administrations. What are the top actions citizens can watch for, and where should journalists focus their efforts to monitor this administration and protect the nation against abuse? And journalists have problems, by the way. I just need to codify this a bit, that they've never faced before. I just had lunch yesterday with David Talbot of the Chronicle, and
sure,
certainly one of our finest journalists. And we kind of commiserated about the fact that now journalists are in a hole that they've never seen before, because they can so easily be accused of fake news and the rest of it, and are accused. I mean, you know, the news conference Trump had, he wouldn't even entertain a question from a guy at CNN. And he was telling him that he was being rude when he was pressing Trump.
You got a president-elect, can you believe this, that is condemning the free and open press. Every single tweet he puts out is anti-press. We wouldn't be talking here on this, in this studio right now, if it wasn't for our Constitution and the press. This book that I wrote, People Versus Greed, everything in there was stimulated by the press. Somebody, some investigative reporter going out and finding the true facts. That's what it's all about. I don't mean to be so biased in favor of press, but when we get rid of the press, we don't have a country anymore. Look around.
Well, the press has its problems, but we need to have a free press, and we need to have a monitoring press, and we need to have those who are going to press hard on
government. Oh, there's no question. Now, let me go one step further. Now, the problem the press is facing is the internet. Because you got any yobob up there putting nonsense out on these blogs, on this, on that, and we're going to a total social media that is being very deconstructive to our legitimate press. Therein lies part of the problem.
Big problem. Big part of the problem. Let me go to some more listener questions. People are looking for solutions here. A listener asks, what charges could be brought against the Wall Street bankers? Everything they did was legal because of deregulation.
That's not true at all. There was so much that was illegal. And what happened was Holder made that infamous statement. I'm going to paraphrase it. They're too big to fail. We can't let them fail. That is sheer, unadulterated nonsense. If a CEO steals money or authorizes the stealing of money, that person should be held responsible and go to jail. I don't care, male, female, if it's the CEO.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again.
Officer,
I'm repeating myself,
jail.
But the RICO Act, why wasn't the RICO Act brought in?
It should have been used, but that we didn't have people in the DOJ with the guts to do that, did we?
Ben asks, it seems that our government is more and more owned by corporations than the rich. How can the little guy even have a chance when things like Citizens United exist?
Citizens United is a tragedy, and the bigger tragedy is that the fifth appointment is coming to that Supreme Court very shortly, and Citizens United will be the law of the land, 5-4, for a long time to come. Citizens United means that anybody with that big money, that big wallet, can control what happens to you tomorrow.
Again, if you've just joined us, we're talking to Burlingame-based attorney and author Joe Kitchett. His new book is The People Versus Greed, Stealing America, Main Street Versus Wall Street. Here's Harry. Harry, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
My pleasure. Joe, it's really wonderful to hear you on, hear your voice on and what you're saying. It sounds like Bernie Sanders writ large. I wanted to know what you thought about the fact that Kamala Harris also did not prosecute Wall Street, did not send anybody to jail at Takata for manufacturing and hiding the fact that they had a failing windshield protector, that she didn't prosecute GM for the failure to tell people that they had a defective ignition switch, and whether you think Javier Becerra will be any better.
Well, that's really interesting that you raised that. I really appreciate the work that Kamala Harris did. I disagreed with her in many respects. You heard my comments on Martin's Beach. She never went after Khosla. Look, that's the world of politics, but as long as we have the Kamalas out there, she's got great principles. I think she's going to be a great U.S. senator. Was she the best attorney general the state ever had? I don't think so, but that's my personal opinion. She did a terrific job with what she did. You just named four or five examples where she should have been in the trenches with her people every day, every night, going after corruption. She should have done that. She didn't do that.
Let me thank you for the call, Harry. You've been a big supporter and a friend of the governor's, of Jerry Brown.
Big supporter.
Has he been tough enough when it comes to corporate greed?
Well, you know, Jerry is very smart. He understands the political base like few people I have ever met. So he knows what he has to do. He's a very conservative guy, I might add. You know, Jerry was not really Jerry's going to get mad at me for saying this. He was not what we call the most active attorney general, was he? But he was looking at that time of coming back because he's done more for our society as a governor. Has he got his weak points? Of course, we all do, except you and I, Michael. We're perfect. Jerry's been a great governor. Was he?
Speak for yourself, Joe.
Was he a great attorney general? I used to go to him and say, Jerry, why don't you go after X? And he'd say, wait a minute, I got to think about it. I got to talk to my dogs.
He has dogs now? Is that,
oh,
he says the one
got,
dog.
He's got, yeah. No, he's got one. Unfortunately, just died. He's.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Jerry's a wonderful human. One of the great governors we've had, in my opinion.
Here's Frederick. Join us, Frederick. You're on the air.
Gentlemen, thank you very much, Michael. I had the chance to have a dialogue with Bernie Sanders at a town meeting in New Hampshire, and I asked him if the frame of his campaign could be described as privatization versus democracy. And Bernie said, absolutely. And I went to question Bernie about using that frame to educate America about building a democratic economy and a democratic society, Joe, much based on, let's say, the Western European model of people paying their fair share. And the Western Europeans laugh at us for how crazy we are, individuated and individualized, while the Europeans look after one another and they pay their fair share. You know, they see the benefit of the other and the benefit for themselves as well. But yet, on the progressive side in America, we have absolutely no understanding of the society that we want to build and the direction of how to get there. And I want your response as to how do you feel about using this model of greed, which I honor that you've come up with, and privatization is the absolute embodiment in capitalism of a greed ethos. And let's compare that to building a democratic social democracy where all of our basic needs are met and we have a much higher standard of living for all Americans. What do you think?
Well, putting on a very basic level, wait a couple of years when you want to go to Yosemite. Wait a couple of years when you want to go back to some of our great national parks and you find out you can't get on because they've been sold to developers to build golf courses, probably putting the name Trump on the golf courses. The bottom line is that's the problem we're faced with. Privatization is a huge, huge problem. But the minute you talk anti-privatization, you know what you are? You're a socialist communist. That's what they were calling poor Bernie Sanders.
Well, Bernie was a socialist. I mean, you said before you were a capitalist. He said on this program, yes, I'm a socialist, but I'm a democratic socialist. He made that decision. Scandinavian socialist.
Whatever you want to call it. Look, I do very well. I told you at the very outset, I make a lot of money. I do very well. I try and give it back. I am a dyed-in-the-wool capitalist, but this call is absolutely right. This concept of privatization of everything is sheer, unadulterated nonsense. Could you imagine if we privatized BART? Could you imagine if we privatized all of our buses? I mean, it would be scandalous. That's the problem we're faced with. That's the direction we're going in.
BART's been suffering some delays recently. There are those who would step up and say privatization would mean perhaps better run BART.
Now, let me just make this argument. I'm telling you that we oftentimes need better management in all of our public entities. Let's get back to management. And the one thing I'm going to give Trump credit for, he's a businessman. If you read his book, The Art of the Deal,
which was written largely by a guy named Tony Schwartz, not necessarily Donald Trump.
You're right. But the mentality was there. And, you know, I'm all in favor of bringing some business principles to Washington. I want honest, legitimate business principles. I want to pay for where we're going. Don't get me started. Let me just finish with this. $4 trillion went into Afghanistan and Iraq. $4 trillion. The bulk of that money went to industrial military contractors who built warplanes, who built this, who built the poor little guy on the ground. He got a fraction of that came back seriously injured. Same thing with Vietnam. Look, I jumped out of 12 airplanes with a gun on my back. I was a special forces officer. I spent 30 years serving my country. But I saw sheer incompetency. I'll close with this. When I was a commander out there at the Presidio of the JAG unit, I was a colonel at the time, I got a message from the Pentagon that said, Colonel Cachet, this was about June 10th. I remember this date so specifically. You know why? I hadn't spent my budget fully, and June 30th was coming. I got a message from the Pentagon that I had to send 15 to 20 people to Germany to eat up my budget. Can you imagine that? I had to call people and say, by the way, you're going to Germany next week. I refused to do it.
We still call you Colonel?
No.
I mean, someone who's a former congressman is always called congressman, right? Yeah. Or congresswoman?
Some people call me colonel.
People who served under you, I imagine. And then we're going to get another caller on her. Judy, that's you. Morning.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm very interested in finding out Mr. Cachet's opinion, or is it Dr. Cachet?
Or Colonel Cachet, yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Judy.
Of Lawrence Lessig, as well as the person who heavily influenced him, the late hacktivist Aaron Swartz, especially Aaron's desire to get publicly funded information into the hands of people. One of the things that I think of is that we get retail information, but if we want to have, you know, kind of information that is really important, you know, you talk about textbooks that cost, you know, hundreds of dollars, or having access into, you know, a highly sophisticated and expensive databases. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. Thanks for the question, Joe.
Yeah, very simple. Lauren Lessig is a hero in our country. When we would go out the door of a C-130, I had 12 heroes standing behind me, all of which were going to jump out that plane for the cause we were facing. Lawrence Lessig is an absolute hero. He's one of many, many people that I think should be in more leadership.
Yeah, at one time he was talking about a run for the presidency.
Yes,
I think he did take a run.
Didn't he file for something?
He did actually file, yeah.
Lawrence came out of Harvard, did he not?
Yeah.
So I don't want to condemn everybody out of Harvard.
Let me thank Judy for the call. Well, you said you socially rub elbows with those
all the time,
people.
All the time. Purple comes off on my sleeve.
Here's a comment, and we're getting several questions along this line, and it gets right to the heart of your book. Can you give us ideas about what we should be doing to fight against Trump and his cabinet?
Well, some of his cabinet may be very good. Obviously, I'm just shocked at some of the appointments being made. The one that's being discussed today, DeVos, she would do away with all public education, which is preposterous. We know that. It's silly. Does she have some good ideas? Yes, she does. I think there's a way maybe you can use a voucher system without disturbing the public education voucher system between public schools. I've got all kinds of thoughts on that. I don't want to waste your time. The bottom line is, how can we stop Trump? We better get people to stand up and do what has to be done immediately. I thought, to be honest with you, that Jerry's appointment of Becerra was very good. He's got a good heart. He knows what he's doing, and he's got the guts to stand up. We need more political bodies that'll stand up and say what has to be said. By the way, that brings me to a great aside. Can you imagine, and I shouldn't even say this, but I'm just going, can you imagine the members of our House and Senate that are not going to go to the inauguration? I just find that very difficult. If I were elected by the people of a congressional district, I sure as hell would want my member of the House going to that inauguration. I know that's off on a whole different subject, but it goes to the principle of I'm talking about. It's involvement. It's getting out there and saying something, being heard, standing up. Get up off your, I can't use the word I'm told, but I'll spell it, A-S-S. Get up off that and be heard.
And 53 or 54 congressional representatives who are boycotting the inauguration are making a serious mistake by your judgment.
It's just, to me, it's outrageous.
They should be there in many instances to confirm a presidency that they oppose and that they're against.
It's not confirming. It's a transition. And we're all about a free, open, democratic transition. Do we agree with Trump? Absolutely not. But guess what? He was elected by the Electoral College. Don't get me into that. But he was.
I wonder how many times you've said, don't get me started, don't get me into that.
Because we'd be here for 3 hours, Michael.
Joe, pleasure to have you here. Thank you for joining us. Joe Cachette, again, is Burlingame-based attorney, author of The People vs. Greed, Stealing America, Main Street versus Wall Street. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. This forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. And our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.